creators of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
A proud member of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network.
Welcome, everybody, to another goddamn horror podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I paused there. You like that?
You did.
Yeah, I paused. I gave it a little, like, is he going to say it? Is he going to say the thing?
Did he actually forget it?
I did.
Did Ryan have a stroke?
I kind of forgot it. Did I have a stroke? Yes. Yes. I mean, at least in the future. You know what I mean? And since time is cyclical, I guess I've already had it. Anyways, welcome to another goddamn horror podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I am Ryan Danley, coming to you from a rainy...
You're usually Ryan Danley. This episode, because we have another Ryan on, you're Ryback.
I'm Ryback. Okay.
Like, it is. Yeah.
Like, is it Casey Ryback from Steven Seagal? Steven Seagal from
Steven Seagal part.
Or the Feed
what's,
Me More.
What's
guy.
The What's the name of the
Pro
movie?
Wrestler.
Under siege. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. You know, I like Steven Seagal because I do feel like I could fight him. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not fucking now. Yeah, yeah, especially now. I'm still not fucking with Van Damme, though. Like, I'm still not gonna mess with Van Damme.
No, absolutely not.
Lundgren looks still kind of ripped.
Yeah.
Dolph will rip your throat out for sure. Steven Seagal will just get out of breath.
He'll just be so annoying. And then he claims to have the world's largest sword collection, which is, both the lamest lie of all time and maybe the most funny. So, you know,
I've got a lot of swords. Do you want to see them?
I don't want to see your swords, any of them in any sort of double entendre way or even actual swords. Nope. And like, I'm not anti-sword. You know what I mean? Swords are dope. You know what I mean?
I'm anti-Steven Seagal with swords.
Yeah, I'm anti-Steven Seagal doing anything. With me, as always, are my Brooklyn compatriots, Graham from Flatbush. What's up?
Not much. I pulled a double today, which means I got up at 5:30 to get kids to school and then came home and tried my hardest not to fall asleep and fell asleep and then woke up right before I had to pick up the other kids, all groggy and stuff. So sorry, afternoon kid, but you know, you're getting the least of me because divorce mornings are a thing now.
right. Divorce mornings are rough. Jonas, how's Bushwick?
It's good, man. I'm getting ramped up for Comic-Con tomorrow.
Yeah, we got all sorts of we got like media passes and shit like that. We're like fucking
a whole shitload of them, dude. Yeah, like we're gonna have so much fucking content after this weekend just for all sorts of cool horror shit from Comic-Con. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, because we're kind of like all grown up now. We're on the fucking Morbidly Beautiful fucking podcast network. We fucking we're high media.
We got media passes.
To
Blumfest.
To Blumfest. Jesus Christ.
I've got a nice surprise for our patrons, the Army of the Goddamn Later.
Very nice.
Well, I'm out too.
All right. Well, as fun as this chat is, I do want to say one thing real quick before we move forward. I didn't come up with a ska joke today. I've done ska jokes, but I decided I'm not your ska dancing monkey. Okay, I'm not going to come up with a ska joke.
You just announced you were a skamedian last week.
I'm a skamedian, but like I did, I can't dance when you say to dance. Okay, like I'm like, you know, I can't do ska jokes on demand. You know what I mean? So.
No, I demanded zero ska jokes. Let's go. And you're like, I'm moving on to killing Target security.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a Target security murder meme thing going now.
All right, we should move on.
Okay,
this is ridiculous. I'm really excited. I should have checked, but I will check with him right now. I think it was Panic Fest, but as a lot of you know, it might have been popcorn, but we'll figure it out. I saw this at one of those virtual festivals, and it was called Eldritch USA. And I went in knowing pretty much nothing about it. And it turned out to be a Lovecraftian musical. And I fucking loved it. It was super fun. And today we have the director and writer, Ryan Smith. Thank you so much, Ryan, for being here.
Yeah. It was actually a Popcorn Fritz.
Popcorn Fritz. Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah. I Panic and Popcorn happened fairly close this year, and I like got confused. But thank you. Yeah.
Panic and Popcorn sounds like an awesome fucking anthology, by the way. Like, just as for an real. Aside, Panic and Popcorn, that sounds like it could be right up there with VHS.
It's kind of my autobiography title too. You know,
it's a working title.
Yeah, it's a working title.
Go ahead,
Graham.
Yep. All right. This is a musical. And it's right away it tells you that, and it's very upbeat, and it's definitely not what you think Lovecraftian going in. Like, as Lovecraftian, I was like, oh, it's going to be dark and spooky and everything I've ever learned from Lovecraft. And then this was like happy musical and shit, and it was rad. I love that kind of contrast. So yeah, can you please tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, that was actually very intentional. I wanted to create something that there were these dark, I mean, depressing things happening, but it was unfolding in a way that was colorful and bright and happy sounding with all the music and things that didn't seem to go together and hopefully therefore gelled together in an interesting way. Couple of the inspirations that I took from it was actually from Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah.
A massive inspiration. In fact, Eldritch was originally written as a series similar to Dr. Horrible, where it was supposed to have six episodes. And then also obviously taken from other things. Some of the story ideas came from Lovecraft's The Dunwich Horror. Mm-hmm. And then just pulling a little bit from obviously like Little Shop as far as the vibe.
Sure. And Little Shop still amazing.
Still right up there.
So did you like come up a theater kid? Is that how this happens? Because when I started watching and I'm like, oh, they gave some theater kids some money. Like they
in the best way. It's like this is theater kid like this, you know, like
So I was in theater whenever I was in high school. I actually got to play Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors.
That's cool.
So I definitely have a soft spot for that. But actually, after high school, I never did really any very much theater at all ever since then. That was like, you know, 26 years ago. Sure. So, I guess it came up that way. But I have such a weird, eclectic mix of things that I like that whenever I was ready to do my first feature, I was like, how many of these things can I cram into the same thing? I mean, I even considered doing puppets at one point. You can see my Muppets up here behind me. Yeah. So, you know, I think probably everybody's glad that I left that out. But, you know, it's I like to see how many things I can throw together.
I like that.
I think the puppets would have worked, actually.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. If you would have had a random puppet scene just right in the middle of the movie, people would just be like, well, what the fuck? It would have been in the best way. They would just been like, all right. Now there's puppets. There's puppets singing.
Have you ever seen the puppet episode of Angel?
I haven't.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, was Angel. It yeah, oh, well, no, it's just Angel. It's season five. Yeah. It's season five, final season of Angel. They get like possessed and they all turn into puppets. And so they're all like puppeted people. It's so good. It's such a great. It's like Angel, not great throughout, but has some real gems in there. Anyways, so
its highs are just as high as some Buffy's, I think. Yeah. Anyway,
How do you, we can argue about that later, Graham,
absolutely.
Yes. So like you just get this idea to like, I'm going to write a musical completely. How does that like, wouldn't like, cause that's like an undertaking, you know what I mean? Like that's not like as somebody who's a writer myself and does things like, there are times when I try to do these big things. And so how do you jump into that? Like, cause it's a big take.
I think you have to be a little crazy.
Sure.
Cause that was probably the biggest thing I heard starting off when I was writing. It was when everybody was saying, this is a little too ambitious. Sure. And and really I wanted to make it as big a scale as I could for a small budget. And as I was going through trying to fit the music in, I kind of looked at a bunch of other different musicals and I wanted to make sure I didn't fall into the traps of some of the ones that I've seen where people will do something and then they'll sing about the thing that they just did. And then they'll do something else and they'll sing about the thing that they just did.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that the music was a vehicle to push the story forward, that if somebody watched it and they stripped the music out, they wouldn't know what was happening.
So
all the songs that we had in there were very much an intentional, here we are at point A, they're going to sing a song that gets us to point B, and then we continue on with the story.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's super cool. And it has to be just really hard. As a musician who writes songs, like, I try to write songs that, like, just go together, like, you know, like, as a pair, even. Like, so, like, writing a movie and then trying to fit music and lyrics over dialogue and acting is just insane and super rad. And, yeah, it's just got to be so hard.
I had a lot of help from Nathan Hurley is the one who helped me. He and I would work back and forth on the lyrics. I would basically say, okay, here's where we are in the story. Here's where we need to get. Here's what they need to sing about. You know, here's the theme. You know, we would kind of go back and forth. And then once we had a good solid idea, he'd go off and he'd finalize the lyrics and write the music. And it was a really good working relationship between the two of us. If you liked kind of the, not necessarily exactly how the music was, but just kind of the jive of the music. He's in a band called Fox Royale, and they are just
fantastic. Yeah.
They're really worth looking up.
I wanted to ask about this because, like, when it comes to musicals, especially with horror movies, I've always been somebody who's been kind of like an outspoken fan of those things, and a lot of people give me shit for it. Is the best way to put it, like, because, like, I'll suggest movies a lot, like, I recommend movies all the time, like, it's one of my things that I like doing. But when it comes to horror musicals, I think there's like two different types. Like, you have something that's like a Sweeney Todd, where literally everything is music, like, they're singing every single word that's in the script, and they have one like yours where that's like you have the transitional things, like the transitional songs, you have the songs that lead to another scene, lead to another part, lead to another thing, like connective tissue almost. Was that something that was intentional from the beginning, or did you ever think about doing this just as like a full-blown, like, we're doing it a song the whole time?
I did not think that I had the chops to do an opera, you know, because, like, I didn't see the genetic opera Repo. I didn't see that actually until just like a few weeks ago.
And, oh, wow.
Okay.
And I was just the ability to go through and just write basically a continuous song from the opening moments to the closing moments. I think that's an entirely different skill set and thing to tackle. I think it would be interesting to do, but. But yeah, I like more the traditional musical where you've got a story and then you have fun music in there just to elevate it.
I do too. I think it's more like the pop songs or the hits, like on an album, like they'll all of a sudden, like on like an atmospheric record, you know, and all of a sudden it'll get real poppy and upbeat. I love that. you said it was supposed to be a show.
Yeah. that's what we were, it seems, originally
plotted it. Yeah, so that seems like it would have worked pretty great. Would you have done like one song each episode?
That's how I wrote it. So originally I did write it. It was a complete 6 or 7 episode show, and I made sure that each episode had at least one song, was kind of the way I tried to spread it out. And then somebody came along that was kind of helping me produce it for a little while. They ended up moving on to something else, but they said that as far as festivals and things go, this would do better as a film, and that getting it distribution would also be easier as a film as opposed to as a series. So we went through and kind of reworked the whole script and tried to mash it all together, but we also kept the title cards for the episodes. So if you watch the film, 6 different title cards throughout the film, and that's where all the episodic breaks would have been.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome. Yeah, that's actually cool how you weave that in there. Do you have any intentions to make this a TV show? Like, if you, like, let's say that this gets good distribution, gets picked up, it's popular, and everything like that. Do you have any intention to make it into a series? Because legitimately, it would work fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I would love to do that. fact, I would be willing to do that two different ways. I felt like my anything better, but whenever I was writing the script, you know how when you write something, you've got specific known actors in your head, to kind of help you flesh out their characters as you're going through. So, you know, in the original script, when I was going through the two brothers, I actually had envisioned as Jason Bateman. We were able to go through and just start over from scratch. And my original script also had some differences. It would be fun to kind of flesh that out and then continue into season two. Or I would also love to keep working with the actors I have, because like I said, they did an amazing job. Is they just don't have that star power behind their names. But I would love to take their stuff and move forward. I think you guys saw a longer cut of the film. There's actually a shorter cut that we're taking around now, but the longer cut has a couple of post-credit scenes that would have then led into a second season.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I can't remember her name, but the one of them catches a ride out of town.
Yeah. And then at the very end of the original, there's also an artifact that the best friend ends up with, and then he's got something weird going on with his hair.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I love it.
Did you, speaking of shows and star power, did you work on Luther? Is that what your IMDb?
I did not.
Okay.
Okay. I have told IMDb that. They I'm like, that's not me. And they just... okay, so yeah, no, I did not work on Luther.
I would start trying to get royalties for that.
I feel like IMDb is going to be like,
IMDb said I did it. So
yeah,
right. I mean, and like
we won't tell.
Right, like because that's Netflix and Idris Elba and like a lot of like cool shit. You know what I mean? I was like,
What a wholesome Hollywood scandal that would be.
Like, yeah,
I tried to tell IMDb that it wasn't me, and they wouldn't take no for an answer. So give me my money.
The best way to fix it was to involve money. Okay, good. Well, now we're clearing that up on here because I'm looking at it and I'm like this whole time I was like, ooh, I wonder if he's met Idris Elba. And
I wish I could say yes.
Yes, because don't we all just want Idris Elba around the house? Does. Yeah, around the house to say cool shit. You know what I mean?
If I met Idris Elba, I would just float. I would float into the air and never come back down. Yeah, I would be gone.
I would like put it on my resume. You know what I mean? Like it was like worked at this grocery store, that grocery store, that time I met like
Idris Elba. I wouldn't leave him alone. Like, put it right on the bottom of the resume. Right.
I want to say real quick about the cast. Oh, got me.
Graham and I are battling today. Right. Graham and I are
just real quick.
Graham's fighting himself.
Well, I called you Ryback.
yeah, exactly. So that's it.
The cast was fucking dope. I really loved Clyde, I think it was. Weston McNew, I think, who ended up at the end. But, like, yeah, he was hysterical and perfect. Like, he was perfect with everybody around him. Like, yeah, he was one of my favorite characters by far.
He was actually really good at, like, he would work with the script and do pretty close. But he would also just, at random times when I wouldn't see coming, he would just go completely off book and just start doing his own thing. And we ended up keeping half the stuff he did because he's definitely a funny guy. And so he just, like, the whole thing in the scene where he's talking about something and then he just starts laughing and his face turns red and then he just pops back up and stops laughing. Like, that was not in the script. And we're just like, we gotta keep that.
How do you feel? I mean, how do you feel about that in general? You gotta pull that off pretty well. You gotta be pretty cozy to pull off like the riff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in a comedy, especially because comedy's timing and it's a lot of, you know, word stuff. And you know what I mean? Like, is this good? So
a lot of Eldritch, they ended up sticking pretty close to the script, but Wes would riff on occasion. And then usually we would have him make sure we went back and did one that was strictly according to the script. Also Cameron, the best friend who's played by, it's Colin. Who's played by Cameron Perry is he also riffed. He would just say lots of random little things.
Yeah, I like the. I know on. I think you should leave the comedy show, which I'm a big fan of. But they don't let anybody ad lib at all. The only person they let ad lib is I just forgot his name. Better Call Saul.
Robbins.
Saul. Tim no, something. No, well, Tim writes it all. No, Tim Robbins writes it all. But Saul Goodman. Whatever his name is. Yeah. Why am I? This is like the
Bob
worst
Odenkirk.
Part. Bob Odenkirk. Odenkirk. Yeah. Yeah. He's on an episode of I Think You Should Leave, and they let him riff. So that's you know what I mean.
You have to let Bob Odenkirk do basically what he wants,
especially on that show, because it's akin to what they're trying to do. You know, all his early stuff is akin to that. So, anyways, so that's got to be fun though if you have somebody who's good at it, and but also the script is always a little maneuverable,
it's there for a reason, but yeah. You can also okay, so here's a question, because based off just the tone of the movie and the tone of the acting and how the performances came across, are any of these people improv comics by any chance?
So Wes did a lot of improv. We had a local show that was like literally like a night of improv. And Wes actually was a part of that. So I think that's why it kind of came to him naturally. And we all knew that. So we would just give him a little bit of freedom to do his craft.
Did you know that improvers and stand-ups are natural enemies?
Well, the reason I ask... But here's certain musicals, like the actual music in this movie and also like a lot of the performances, they reminded me of two different things. They reminded me of Cannibal the Musical, and they reminded me of Book of Mormon, like tonally, as far as like the actual music itself goes, where it was like this, like you could be singing about something fucked up, but the actual tone of the music was very bright. It was very happy. It was very joyous.
The music was really, really fucking so good and catchy as fuck. Like, I have shit stuck in my head.
To this day, like from stuff like Cannibal the Musical, I still have like Have a Spadoinkle Day stuck in my head. Like it's like stuff like that. So you have these things that are again these contrasts on it. So that's why I was wondering about the improv thing, because a lot of the times the performances themselves, like. Even though we're natural enemies, I will say this, that if an improv comic, if there's a person who has done improv before they go into stand-up, you can tell almost immediately. And the performance that they give is, it's naturally a better performance. Like, just as a performer, it's naturally better. So like a lot of these people, it comes also from the theater kid thing. A lot of the cast that you had there, like the way that their actual performances were coming across was like, oh shit, like star power, not like these people know what they're doing. Like these are like naturally good performances. Like to the point where I don't know how nice Andy Finney is. I don't know how nice he is, but on the movie,
he's that guy. he's actually a super nice guy.
He has to be. There's no way he's not. Because yeah, like on the movie, I was like, okay, he's doing that part so well. Like,
maybe the last 10, not even like a minute. I wanted to punch him. Like, he had a very punchable face until the very end. I was like, all right, cool, cool.
But it was like also like the way that he delivered the lines were very that much like, great. Hey, fuck you.
It was slimy and great.
And like, I feel like those performances, you kind of have to have some sort of a theater background to do those kind of things.
And so we did a wide casting call for all the cast that we had, because again, we cast locally, and with the exception of I think Aline, who played Jill, all of them were very strong theater. Now Graham, who played the main character Jeff, he had been out in Hollywood for a little while and had done some work, but with a lot of background characters and things like that. But he was also very much a theater guy. In fact, whenever he came back to Springfield, he continued to do theater. So my guess is that's also where a lot of that vibe comes from, is because they are all very, very, Springfield is very much a theater town, and there was a lot of talent from that area.
That actually explains your interaction, Ryan. It was actually just a theater performer that was there. he was improvising is what he was doing. Just right there.
we were talking before the show about my time on the Greyhound spot in Springfield, in beautiful Springfield. I'm sure it's a very nice town. Where I was on the Greyhound and I went to the bus station. I mean, I know that the Greyhound station in every town is a vibe, right? You know what I mean? Like it's a world, it's a world unto its own. It's like, it's got a culture of its own. You know what I mean? And like, and it's just kind of every town. The culture at the Springfield one was literally like a 60-year-old man with a money roll standing in the middle and young men coming up to him to go home, which I was explaining earlier is not a ticket to the next Greyhound, but a ticket to some dude's crawl space. So that's, that is some John Wayne Gacy shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just gonna swing on down. Yeah. I like John Wayne Gacy because he is a fat guy.
I like him.
I like a fat serial killer because, like, you know, he threw the bodies under the house, which as a fat guy, that tracks. You know what I mean? That's like the Big Bite boxes in the back of my car. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Also, you know who's not crawling under that crawl space to get those bodies? A fucking fat dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Threw him down there and he's just like, that's where they reside now.
Yeah, because
they're gone forever.
You can't go into a crawl space. Crawl spaces are terrifying. You know what I mean? Like, I can't.
Oh, man.
Anyway, we also, the thing that we do have to talk about a little bit, that's we want to continue to talk about your movie. What I want to point out, though, is that we're both named Ryan. And we know that there's a new trend of Ryans are meeting up. Ryan's our anti-Brian. Were you called Brian growing up?
I think I've consistently been called Brian. I typically introduce myself as Brian without the D.
Yeah, that's a good call. Nice. But see, I won't give the Bryans that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to they're Ryans with an extra letter. You know what I mean? Like, they're I had a teacher in the sixth grade, because I'm a little bit of an older Ryan. There wasn't a lot of, but she just called me Brian. She's older and I'm certain dead now. You know, cause that's like one of the gifts of being a grown up is that all those assholes are dead. But she called me Brian my entire sixth grade year. Cause I'm pretty sure she just thought it was a typo and I didn't have the heart to tell her. This old lady, Miss Miller was her name. I hope you're resting easy, Miss Miller, with your fucking small
your extra
world,
B.
Brian.
Yeah. I'm starting to wonder if you know a little bit too much about how she died.
Listen, you can connect the dots. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like,
Bryans are just Ryans that are tryhards. That's all it is. Just
Ryan.
Like,
my last name, I've never had my first name spelled correctly, really, but it's always pronounced correctly. My last name has never been pronounced correctly ever. It's Faye, but it looks like Fahey. That's all I've ever. So I don't care. That's fair enough, though. Like, Faye and Fahey. Like, I don't know the difference, so fuck that. Like, but
all these meetups are very specific. There are no fucking Bryans allowed.
Yep, there's like, no Bryans allowed.
No, I was they're no, so no. Great. I know. I was. I got real mad for like a day at the Jeff Fahey in Lawnmower Man.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I was like, no, it's fuck, because I found out he pronounced it Fahey. I was like, no, fuck that, it's Faye. And then everybody else in the world pronounced it Fahey. And I was like, oh, I'm wrong.
They're like, I don't know. So, he's the one that's in the movie. You're great.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, shit.
a little bit of another goddamn horror podcast trivia is that the very first episode we had to re-record the intro because I introduced Graham as Graham Fahey. We did. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a. So how do you like being a Ryan? And now like as another Ryan in the entertainment business. How's that working out for you?
Graham, out of this conversation.
Let me tell you right now, there's a lot of Ryan Smiths. So if you try to look up anything I've done on IMDb, there's a lot of Roman numerals that go after my name. But one interesting point that I like to point out is that if you look at the Roman numerals behind my name, I am Ryan Smith 69.
That's fucking fantastic.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Yes. Hell yes. And apparently, you know, better than, yeah, you are. Holy shit. That is hilarious.
You know, you don't even have to meet Idris Elba now.
That wasn't even planned. That's just what they gave me.
You were like, no, you're like, nice. See, I would get that, like, I would get that on your driver's license. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would just be like, yep, this is, I'm also. Yeah,
dude, fuck Esquire. You're Ryan Smith 69. All right.
But you got to put it in the Roman numerals, though, so that way they at least have to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to
see somebody at the DMV read that name and then have the dots connect in their head and just be like, oh.
So did you do any of the other, you did the shorts though, right? You did
okay. All the other things listed there I did do a lot of short films. The other one that I directed previously was The Terrible Old Man. It used to be on Amazon Prime. I took it off Amazon Prime because I didn't want anybody to watch that movie and say, oh well, this must be what Eldritch is like, because that's a movie I made 7 years ago. It was sure. The first time I tried to make anything. I mean, it's okay, but I was a one man crew on that. So it was an adaptation of an H.P. Lovecraft story. And I ran the camera, I ran the lights. I hired local theater actors, which I guess is technically kind of what I did for Eldritch too. But I was in an area that did not know anything. I was living in D.C. at the time.
Hmm.
They don't know crap about film out there. So it was
right. So you're a big Lovecraft fan, apparently. What's your favorite like Lovecraftian movie? Are you like a big fan of The Void, or are you a big fan of
The Void was all right. Honestly, the thing that got me interested in the Lovecraft, because I've only been a Lovecraft person for like the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I loved Evil Dead and Army of Darkness growing up. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point when I was in the army, I was just like, where does this Necronomicon thing come from? And then that's when I started going down the rabbit hole and learned about Lovecraft and started. In fact, I'm going through the audio collection of the entire works of H.P. Lovecraft. And I think I've only got 4 hours left in the audio book out of like, it's like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Hour audio book.
It's pretty funny when you actually like read it, because I read all that stuff when I was younger. It's funny when you actually read Lovecraft, because they're like, you know, they were all written for like little pulp magazines, you know what I mean, all his stories. So they're actually like really like kind of short and just sort of fun and wordy as hell, and like, you know, because I think he got paid by the word at that point for freelance writing. And, you know, so it's like, it's funny to like go through and read that. And then you read more about H.P. Lovecraft and you're like, I should have just stopped at the stories. But
I'm going through those audiobooks and like I have to listen to them by myself, because it's like I can't have my kids hear some of this.
right.
I watched Sleepaway Camp for the first time last night, and I never.
Oh, wow.
And holy crap, there's a lot of crazy stuff in that one.
Yeah, totally. Uh-huh. Totally. Yeah, totally.
That was legendarily crazy.
I actually ended up really enjoying Lovecraft's Country, because it was nice to see like African-American, black, whatever you want to call it, take over, you know, because Lovecraft was bad about those sorts of things. So I really enjoyed Lovecraft Country, and like, you know, Jordan Peele's involvement in that and stuff like that. So I think we
super racist.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Super racist. Yeah, he was super
I've been
racist.
Wanting to do oh yeah I've, I've been wanting to do an adaptation of his story, Rats in the Walls, but he has an infamously named cat in that story.
Yes.
That I would like to put in my adaptation. I would like to have a white cat in that story and actually have it named Cracker.
Exactly. Like, and I like it. And I kind of like that take on it, like those sorts of change, because it's acknowledged, it's hard because, like, you know, I mean, all art is, in my opinion, like self-portrait, you know what I mean? But so it is challenging sometimes to like be like, but like, it's impossible
to separate it.
It's right. Yeah. But it is very nice to see people like kind of taking those stories back, because he was such an addition to the horror fantasy, dark fantasy. Yeah. I mean, he's the kind of the inventor of a sort of, you know, like a whole genre that, that we still like absolutely love today, you know what I mean, and it influences so much that we do, and you know what I mean, so it's nice to see that stuff taken back and acknowledging it and say, you know what I mean, like, yeah, we know that that like he was an incredibly flawed person and that's not cool and we don't want to do those sorts of things anymore, but we can take what he used and hopefully make it rad and make fun of it too, you know what I mean, like, you know, because boy, that cat's name is
I think making it a musical is a pretty fucking fun start too.
I feel like he would be like, really, you turn my shit into a musical? We all have a white cat named Cracker. Good for you.
I have one question just about Lovecraft in general. Since you've listened to all the books and Ryan, you've read them all. Cthulhu shows up. That's it, right? Dunzo, everything.
Well, so he gets stopped in the Call of Cthulhu, the one where he's talking about the most. So it's not necessarily that he's done, but I think your chances are pretty bad. I think the only reason they stopped him, they didn't like kill him. They just made him go back to sleep was by ramming a boat into his face. So I mean,
yeah.
I love that the just ramming a boat into Cthulhu's face. He's just like, "Ow, guys!
I'm gonna take a nap."
Bullshit! You hit me in the face with a fucking boat. I'm going to bed.
Like, that's right. I'll see you in 1,000 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll come
now
back.
Now he's gonna be mad about everything. The boat. So I think if he does come out back, it's done.
That you know what's funny, the whole boat to the face thing, that actually makes that movie underwater, that makes that movie have a whole different meaning at the end, like
that's true because
he's like under, like, have you seen that movie, Ryan?
I have not.
Okay, so it's called Underwater, and
not
a lot of
either
people,
of you
you guys have nine.
So I thought the Ryans were cool.
Oh man, no, it's kind of funny.
I bet Brian's seen it.
Oh man,
low blow.
Brian.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. The thing that's funny about it is, like, when that movie came out, it got like automatically shit on because Kristen Stewart was the main star, and everybody
and T.J. Miller.
Yeah, you know what? We're not going to talk about T.J. But he did no juggling in the movie. I'll give him that. He was in there, and then Kristen Stewart was the main star, and it was like her face is on the cover and everything. So horror fans, because they're dumb assholes sometimes, were like, "Eh, the girl from Twilight," you know, like, so they just didn't support the movie. But then when you see the movie, it's so good, and it's like 100% a Lovecraftian horror film that's literally underwater
with a great ending.
When did it come out?
I want to say three or four years ago.
I'm trying to watch a new horror movie every day this month, so I will add that to the list.
No, cool. It's fun.
You're in
it's
good company.
Yeah, that one's. I mean, as far as Lovecraftian films go, that one also is kind of like, it's kind of a sleeper as far as the Lovecraftian stuff goes. And also, like, I don't know if you're into movies that are in big open spaces that like that, because they use the ocean setting very well to make it wide open and claustrophobic at the same time. So it's dope. And then Color Out of Space is the other one. Color Out of Space, have you seen that?
Oh yeah, Color Out of Space is great.
Yeah, okay. So good.
we couldn't let you go without making sure.
So do you make another musical after this? Do you shop this around to see if people are interested in the show aspect of it? Where do you go from here?
Well, so step one, we're still trying to get distribution. We don't have distribution for the film yet. We're in talks with some sales agents. I'm actually going to Fright Fest in London for their Halloween event.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
So hopefully we're going to talk to a distributor there and see if we can kind of start the ball rolling in England and then kind of use that as a backdoor to get into the U.S. I mean, if it's something they like and they want to follow on and do more, I would love to write more Eldritch. It's not what I'm currently writing now, but I would love to write more of it. I was really envisioning Eldritch being kind of a live action Gravity Falls was the direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. Yeah.
I like that a lot. So I want to ask about this one aspect of the movie, because it's, you know, it is a Lovecraftian film, but there's also the cult aspect of it. Are you, like, do you have an interest in cult type of stuff when it comes to horror?
I mean, I have an interest in it. I'm not going to say that I'm super educated on it. I think at one point I got an ebook about like demonology and stuff like that, but that's, I read a lot of Hellboy and stuff like that. And I always admired how Mike Mignola could take any fable and combine it with some random demon and just throw Hellboy into the mix and make a great story. I just thought that was so great. But I do tend to like a lot of cult films. And obviously I like Lovecraft, and he's always got a cult somewhere in one of his stories. So, mm-hmm. It's something that I guess I get plenty of entertainment from. I'm not part of it.
Uh-huh. I was hoping. Just like a guy who's in a cult.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't ask. You threw that information out.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say. Wait, is that a Jared Leto poster behind you?
30 seconds to Mars Island.
30 seconds. I did watch Urban Legend the other day with Jared Leto, young Jared Leto, I was like, you know, he's a handsome man. I could see myself getting roped into the Jared Leto cult. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's got like linen pants on and shit when he's in the cult. You know what I mean? Like a dude very in linen.
Yeah. It's gotta be comfortable.
Yeah. Dude in linen pants always has a leg up on everybody. You know what I'm saying?
You can always trust them.
You can always trust them, yeah. But he's in, but you know, like post my so-called life, you know, that was he's done pretty well for himself, old Jared.
You know what? People give Jared Leto shit, and they should. They should. I'm not
you
saying
too.
You shouldn't. Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
We both, a lot. We both,
yeah. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but no, I will always like the fact that he took his own head to the Met Gala and just walked around with it. Everybody was like, "What the fuck is this guy doing? He's being Jared Leto. This is what he's doing." Yeah, like, that guy has a cult island. He's carrying his own head. All right, like it's just what he's doing.
I want to recommend real quick a really unknown, I guess not, but slept on a cult movie, Faults, with Faults. Mary Elizabeth.
Master Santonio
Winstead, yeah.
Okay.
So you cool. We went to two different eras.
Yeah, we went to cool. Yeah. Well,
that's a great one. That's really one of my favorites. It all takes place basically in like a hotel room, and it's fucking just amazing. I love that movie. And that there's the other ones like Midsommar and Wicker Man and stuff, and they're not the same movie at all. Like that's a big, like, I really get mad when people are like, "Oh, I've seen The Wicker Man," when I ask if they've seen Midsommar. Go to fuck hell. Anyway, yeah. Faults is really one of my favorites. So
yeah.
What are you writing now? Can you give us a little peek about what you got coming up? Yeah.
So I'm workshopping a couple of ideas, but one script that we're already on like a third or fourth draft is one that I'm working on with a friend of mine, Curtis Kilborn. I say Kilborn. I think actually it might be Killingsworth. Dang it. He's going to get me wrong. It's got Kill at the beginning and then a bunch of letters
Craig
after
Kilborn.
That, you know? Name is Curtis. Killingsworth. So Curtis Killingsworth is a friend of mine, and
that's a cool name.
Yeah. Yeah, you're gonna see Killingsworth on it, and you're gonna be like, "Oh, I don't want to see that." Except it's not a horror film, just so you guys know. It's a story he came up with where it's about a guy whose wife has like leaves him suddenly and just leaves him with nothing, and his life is kind of falling apart, and he doesn't know how to pull his life back together, and then suddenly he gets inspired and decides to bring his life back together by building the world's largest fork. And it's a dramedy, and it's interesting. I wrote the first draft. Curtis went through, you know, based on Curtis's ideas, he went through and kind of doctored it up for the second draft, and we're almost on the third draft. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. It's got a lot of humor in it, and this is a fun movie.
I feel like it's got like some James and the Real Girl or whatever vibe to
Lars.
It. You know what I mean? Lars and the Real Lars, Girl. Yeah, yeah. Lars and the Real Girl. Kind of, you know what I mean? Like a little quirky reality thing as a vehicle for a different. Yeah, I like that. It sounds really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's actually a very Springfield centric story, so you may have like horrible flashbacks while you're watching
this. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, just make sure you go to the bus stop and
put now you guys have to. Now you guys have to write it in there. You have to write an old man into the movie that's just waving money around.
Yeah, I mean, you won't even have to write him in. I'm certain if you bring the camera down there, there's just going to be that guy or maybe his kid. You know what I mean? It's a family tradition. I thought you were. I was hoping you were going to say it's a guy. His wife left him. He's been left with nothing, and then he eats a lot of tacos and becomes a stand-up comic and hosts a podcast called Another Goddamn Horror Podcast, and his name is Ryan.
Maybe we need to bring you on as a script advisor.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. Like,
Ryan, you could be the guy waving the money around. That could be a walk-on cameo.
It's a walk-on role.
I don't have that deal. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like you gotta be a certain guy, like really not give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta lean into that so hard. You know what I mean? Like, it's like dropping into a bowl on a skateboard. You know what I mean? Like, if you pull back at all, like, you are like
at all your phones.
You're right. Like, yeah, but yeah. like to run that scam, to run that gig, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like to Pied Piper, young fucking like homeless ish youth greyhound people was just a wad of money. Like, is that's a skill, man. They don't teach that shit. That's like a built-in talent. You know what I mean? That's like you can't letter in that in high school. You know what I mean? Like, you got to
depends on the high school.
It could be the high school. It could be the high school from that movie 187 with Samuel Jackson. It could be that one.
Like, yeah, I like that movie because it's just ridiculous. But it's Ryan, this has been fun. What do you think about trying to do our Sinister Six? How do you feel about that?
I don't know what this is going to entail, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
I mean it's all
Spider-Man, and there's a Sinister Six in that. I mean,
this has nothing to think about that, and this is the opposite of that. You know what I mean? But
listen. You don't know how he's going to answer. It could have something to fucking do with Spider-Man. All right, like, come on.
You know what's funny is nobody
kind of a horror.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is nobody has brought up the Spider-Man thing. But this is like the second episode in a row that we've gotten that. You know what I mean? So, we've talked a lot about the, who our favorite member of the Sinister Six was and stuff like that. So yeah, so now we're living. We're living it. It's just in the water.
It is.
All right, let's see it, Graham.
All right, you ready? First one, Freddy or Jason?
Freddy.
Cool.
I kind of expected that.
Yeah.
he's goofy, and really only the first one and the new Nightmare are probably the only really ones that are you could call scary. But I don't know. He just brings a certain charisma with him that I just love. I love Robert Englund.
Yeah, he's great.
That's it, Jason.
I like
that
he dropped New Nightmare in there.
I don't know
that Jason has a personality, does he?
I think it depends on the movie because
Jason depends on the kill.
Jason takes Manhattan. He's definitely got a personality. Yeah, he's very ACAB in that movie.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which one's the one where he picks up the sleeping bag and beats it against the tree?
Five.
And also Jason X.
Yep. Kane Hodder took it over, he ended up with more personality because Kane Hodder is he wasn't just a stunt man. I mean, he's a stunt man, but like he tried to bring some pizzazz to it, and he started it. Yeah. Jason Takes Manhattan. So
he's kind of the only one that cared about the character too.
Yeah, everybody else was like, yeah, I'll do this. You know what I mean? Like, I'll make.
And then also in the remake, Ken Kershinger, I think, is the one that played him in the remake, and he had a lot of personality. He fucking sprinted, he knew archery, he knew all sorts of, he had skills
skills aren't personality.
He yeah, also could build apparently build he apparently had like a Rats. Like a build right like he can build tunnels and bury a bust, which yeah. is like some next level Jason shit, considering that like I mean being raised without schools and stuff like that, but being able to build a tunnel that doesn't crush you to death, you know what I mean, and bury a bust, man, that's a lot of digging, dude. Like I mean, if you can bury a bust in a hockey mask, bro, like you know what I mean, you're an American, you know what I mean. Like it's that is a beastly move.
I think the Friday 13th remake also is the only time that Jason showed a sense of humor, and it's when he killed Willa Ford because she was swimming in the lake naked, and he stabbed her through the deck of the lake, and then pulled her up onto the deck like five times, so her head just went bonk bonk bonk, and he shook it to get it out of her head, and he was just like, it was a fun little gag. Like, it very much felt like just physical comedy. Like,
all right. What's the difference between thriller and horror?
Oh. So, I feel like thriller doesn't necessarily have to have all the crazy elements to it that you see in horror. Horror allows you to really delve into kind of the supernatural. And if you want to be extra gory, you can be if you want to have that. But whereas I feel like thriller is much more based in reality. There's a lot of horror films out there that are like home invasion stuff that, I mean, it really walks that line between horror and thriller until they become super gory. And then you're like, okay, it's horror. But thriller, I feel like, is so much more grounded in reality than horror tends to be.
Yeah. That's a good answer.
Cool. Yeah. What horror movie influenced your taste the most?
It's probably Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, like the combination of two.
Those are good ones to be inspired by.
Yeah, I mean, I love they've got the gore, they've got the corniness, but also there's a serious story that happens underneath the corniness. I mean, I think there's a time and a place to have a completely serious horror film, but I like having humor and horror together because it kind of, you build the tension and then you release it, and then you build the tension and then you release it. Most of my favorite horror movies are horror comedies.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. I do like the brutality of just brutal films too, but like, and they did it with Evil Dead. They took all the humor out of the 2013 remake or 2016.
I love the remake, and I love Evil Dead Rise too. I feel like those are both fantastic films, but they're just completely different takes on the same franchise.
Which I kind of liked, actually. I ended up liking that a little bit because I think the best choice that they made was to not try to do, because that's lightning in a bottle, you know what I mean, like, and they were able to pull it off for two films, and then also for Army that's of Darkness
Bruce Campbell in a bottle.
But you have to really like to, so to try to come into it, it's like, you know what I mean, it's like, unfortunately, like when they remade RoboCop, which is one of the most unfortunate things in the history of mankind. You know, they couldn't get that cool. You know what I mean? It's like when they remade Point Break. Like, they tried to make it like gritty, and you're like, like Point Break was great because it was ridiculous, and it was like, you know what I mean? It was like
Anthony Kiedis shot himself in the foot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it was Keanu, like in prime Keanu, like, well, first wave, first wave prime Keanu, and not second wave prime Keanu. Like, it was like, you know what I mean, and Gary Busey, fuck man,
it was the
like,
tail end of his first wave, I think, though.
Yeah but you don't get the, you don't yeah, you don't get just... you don't remake that, you know what I mean? So like, yeah, so but they pulled it off with Evil Dead. I think we all kind of universally were like, okay, yeah, this is cool. Like, it's not like, it's not funny and it's not cute and kitschy and campy, but it rocked. I mean, somebody licks
a knife. Was it Ash versus Evil Dead? I felt like that had good moments, but by and large, I just didn't buy the series. There were a couple things in it that I love, but there was other things that I was like, I don't know where they're going with this.
It was okay. I struggle with the CGI in it. I think, I mean, and I understand that it's a reality of it. I enjoy the Deadites as Deadites, you know what I mean? I try not to be a pariah, or like, I try to be new with the things and like, and not be a purist, but it was hard because the Deadites just look so rad as just deadites with, I mean, like some CGI I get, but like so much of it was CGI that it was a little like, it kind of lost a little of the coolness for me, because I mean that those movies are so perfect. Much exactly so perfect yeah. the way they are, that when you tried to fiddle with it, it was I don't know.
I think like also horror comedies are such a cool thing too, because like you can use them to help people get their foot in the door with horror films. Like I have a friend that was very much like, I can't watch gory movies, I can't watch this, blah blah blah, just it, you know, it messes with me or whatever. And then I had her watch Tucker and Dale versus Evil, and she was just like she's like, all right, I'm in, like yeah. she's like now I can kind of like differentiate, you know, and like it's kind of like it removes that wall that your psyche can have towards the gore sometimes. And then like from that point forward, she was like, now I want to watch all the movies. So I just started like throwing things at her now. But yeah, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, that was the one that kind of like pushed her into it.
And that was an intentional thing we did with Eldritch. I every now and then, I think there's a few festivals that they watch Eldritch and they're like, well, this isn't gory enough. And we were intentionally trying to make the film as family friendly as you could be for horror. I mean, it's still horror, but I wanted it to be something that if somebody wanted to take their 10-year-old kid to watch it, they could and still enjoy it. But it still has those horror themes. So it definitely has its quirky place, I guess.
Absolutely.
Oh, next question. if you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be?
Oh, geez.
Any movie doesn't have to be horror.
Does it? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I just watched what I thought was one of the worst movies I've seen in my life. So I would probably say that one. I watched Skinamarink. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I did not get the point. Like I read all these reviews where people go on and on about existential dread from your childhood and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I had a hard time staying. In fact, I'm pretty sure I fell asleep twice while I was watching it. And
it'll make you feel that way, whether you do or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I don't want to.
It's a child's fever dream.
If you guys have the director watch this or something, I don't want to put that guy down, but it was just like, I felt like I was watching paint dry. I didn't get it.
I think
people either dug it or they didn't. That was one of those movies.
Yeah, I personally didn't like it. I just stared at I got really caught up on my Facebook. You know what I mean? Like it was like, you know what I mean? Because it's like I have enough trouble. Like, you know what I mean? Like as such a movie fan and like a nuanced sort of thing, I will still, you know, like. The movies that I love the most are the ones that like I realize I haven't like looked at my phone the entire time. You know what I mean? And like, as terrible as that is, that's just the reality. And I do kind of I do absolutely respect that he did it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he just like, I have this idea of this like really vague movie that's just a lot of like angular shots and a lot of like weird like looking things, and I'm gonna make this children's fever dream. And they kind of get to the point where it's like, do I like it? No, but am I glad there's people out there kind of painting on the edges? Sure. You know what I mean? Like it's you know what I mean? Like it's easy to hate, but yeah, but but if I didn't have this focus on trying to be positive about art, I could easily have said exactly what you said. Like this is like halfway through it, I'm like, man, I don't ever get bored watching movies. I struggle getting bored watching movies. Like people think in like a ghost story, like when she's eating the pie, like people are like, why did she eat the pie for so long? Dude, she could have ate the pie for the rest of the movie. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was just like the most, I don't know if you've seen that movie, but she eats a pie for a long time and then throws it up. And I'm just like, I'm laughing hysterically through it because she's still eating the pie. And I'm like, oh my God, keep eating the fucking pie. This is fantastic. You know, because like whatever, like it's just art and it's just like somebody's writing and it's like kind of cool to like kind of break it down in your mind about how this came to be, and like, and the fact that the dude was like, fuck it, man, she's just gonna eat this pie. She's gonna
eat that pie.
She's just gonna eat this pie for 20 minutes. And like, and
A24 saw that and they were like, we're fucking in.
It's honestly, it's why I love Skinamarink. I hesitate to call it a movie. It's an art exhibit, you know, that's pretty much how I saw it. When I was watching it, I kept getting more wide-eyed because I was like, holy fuck, is it still like this? Like, this is insane. And the longer it went, the more insane it got to me. So I was like, by the end, I was like, I can't believe I just sat through that. And it made me happy. Like, I was like, it felt like I was duped, but in a good way, you know, like, and that this dude had gotten it done. Like Ryan said, like, it kind of blew me away. Not the movie itself, not what was on the screen, but everything around it.
Let me be the heel just here.
Fascinated me.
That movie can definitely go away. Like, it's fine. I'm gonna agree with you and say that's a perfectly fine opinion for that movie. It's a great experiment, though. It was a great experiment. Like, it's, you know, good for him.
Yeah, it definitely felt like I said, I don't want to diss the director, but it definitely felt like it was more meant to be like an art exhibit. Like, if you were walking through a museum and somebody had something playing on the wall that you were supposed to just kind of be part of for a stretch of it. It felt a lot more like that.
Dude, sure. You play that in an immersive haunted house, and I'm shitting multiple pairs of pants. All right. Right. But sitting on my bed watching that dream movie. Yeah.
I'll also say that there was a lot of like images and stuff and sounds and everything that like brought me back to like the fear of childhood and like not understanding and fever dreams, especially. Like, so I got some of it and I love the idea behind it, but yeah, it's not easy to watch. It's listen, fun to think about it,
dude. Somebody tried to sell me for drugs when I was a kid, so I'm not afraid of any noises. Like, I've been through some shit, you know, like,
yeah,
show me a record player.
All right, are ghosts real?
I think so, yes. I had a weird experience once as a kid, but I would just say, even just from an existential, you know, I think that's a thing. I don't know if it's actually a lost soul walking around, but I think people leave imprints, particularly with traumatic experiences and things like that. There's some places, you know, from World War II. I don't think I'd want to go there.
No.
Yeah.
I know as a kid, I've got a twin brother, and he and I, we both felt something. Either we had a big old rat in our basement, we didn't know about it, or there was something weird going on. We both felt something kind of go across, you know, from his bed to my bed and out. And it was kind of a terrifying experience, you know? And it's just weird as a kid to go through that.
Question on that: would it be more scary if you woke up and found out that it was actually a big ass rat, or
that's a good point?
Yeah, it's probably equal, honestly. I think it was my older brother must have hated me. They had this massive clown, like a stuffed clown that was like something you get from a circus or a carnival or something. And I mean, this thing had to have been like 5 feet tall, but just this big, you know, saggy clown thing that they kept down there in the basement with us. And I hated that thing. I think I saw Poltergeist way too many times as a kid. And I just imagine that thing coming to life and just like suffocating me.
Dude, you had to sleep with basement clowns? Of course you made a horror.
Yeah, that tracks.
That's your origin story right there.
So good. I'm just thinking about Hell House now. All right. Last one. Midsommar or Hereditary?
Oh, Hereditary, 100%.
You were quick. With that. I like it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh yeah. I don't have anything against Midsommar. I thought it was beautifully shot. Whenever I walked away from that film, I felt like because I was a man, I was a bad guy. And maybe that wasn't necessarily what they wanted me to feel, but that was how I felt by the end of that movie.
Oh, they wanted you to feel that way.
And therefore, I'm a piece of shit. Whereas Hereditary had so many layers, and I read a couple articles where they talked about it. I'm assuming that Avi Arad intentionally put all those layers in there, and it's not somebody just making that up, and Avi just went, yeah, that was on purpose. But the article that I read basically said that each of the characters in Hereditary represented a different approach to loss. And when you start looking at it that way, it was not only an impressive horror film that got under your skin, but also just had just a beautiful way of looking at loss from those different perspectives. It was such a fascinating movie.
And it had a little girl's head covered in ants. You know what I mean?
Horrifying.
Right. And so there's the deep shit. And then there's just a shot, which is one of my favorite shots in movie history of a dead girl's, dead young girl's head covered in ants. Because it wasn't. It wasn't enough just to have her head on the side of the road. You know what I mean? Like, they were like, it's got to have insects.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I think the two shots from that one, they get stuck in my head the most are, first off, just the random naked old people in the background.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to get out of your head. And then, but the other one where the mom's cutting her own head off, that just,
this
is one of those images that just sticks with you. And you're just like,
dude, the sound design on that part specifically. I watched. So I watched that movie. I watched it multiple times, but I was kind of in the same boat as Graham. Both of us, when we saw that movie, when the whole her head getting knocked off on the whole pole thing,
checked out mentally.
The movie, yeah, that stopped it. Like the movie,
remember anything after that. I had to rewatch it.
Yeah. So it was just like, So then when I watched it a second time, I watched it in theater and I reabsorbed everything. And then when I got it on physical media, I watched it at home, but I watched it with headphones. And oh my God, the sound design in that movie, there's so much little hidden nuggets of stuff that are like make it even scarier. Mm-hmm. And that scene specifically where she's sawing her head off with the piano wire, I don't know how he did the sound design, like how he pulled it off, but the actual sound of it happening legitimately makes your skin crawl. Like it's a terrifying noise. And then the thump afterwards, you're like, oh, the head's gone. That is so a good. Whole that thing that's all the way gone. Like
when her head hits that telephone pole, I watched the first time I watched it was in the theater, and the whole theater was just dead silent for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We were at the Alamo, and you just couldn't even hear people eating their popcorn. Like everybody just stopped.
I was also at the Alamo when I saw it, and that was the same thing. Everybody was just like, and then like there was no noise. Like it was, I think everybody kind of got the Men in Black zapper thing when that happened, where they're just like.
I'm just so glad I didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it was like, because like I usually don't care about things being spoiled, but just like,
but
I just couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? When I saw it. So yeah, I love it.
Well, and from the honestly, it was so smart with the trailer. From the trailer, you assume that she is a major part of the entire story.
Right.
And that to happen so early, you're just like, oh my gosh. You just don't see it coming.
I assumed she was in it for the haul when I started it. Yeah.
Another movie that really got into my head, and it probably is partially because of when I watched it. I saw Paranormal Activity in theater. When it first came out, it was a full theater. Everybody was freaking out. But I watched like a midnight showing. So I'm getting home at like 3 a.m. The whole house is asleep. And that's when all the crazy stuff was happening in that movie. So I had the hardest time falling asleep that night.
Yeah, I really love the Paranormal Activity movies. Most of them. But when that first one came out, like it was actually like a scary movie. You know what I mean? Like it was like now there's I think 8 of them.
I didn't give it a chance. That's when I first watched it, and I thought it was corny as shit.
Now Graham's the heel.
No, but now I like it.
That was a lot of fun way to kill it on the I had a vanish there for a second. My dogs were going crazy because I imagined demons or something outside. You know what I mean? They heard our skinamarink hot takes and
they were actually answering the Sinister Six question and telling you that ghosts are real.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually what they were doing.
You know, everybody gets sad when the dog dies in horror movies, and I'm like, sometimes my dogs, I mean, I love them to death, but yeah, you know, go after that demon, guys. You know what I mean? Like, you do your job. recommendation time. Graham, what do you got?
Son of a bitch. All right. Real quick, I started going through all my music of this year and to see what I really, really love. And it turned, like, I think I've been listening to Paris, Texas more than anything else this year, especially since the album dropped this summer. It's just listen to Paris, Texas, anything they've done. Hip hop group from Compton, very artsy, a little like Odd Future-ish, just very eclectic and great. Capra, who our listeners will know, we spoke with Crow, the lead singer. They just put out their new album, Errors, second album, sophomore album. They went more hardcore with this. Ryan, I think you'll like this one more. It's a little less metal-y. They referred to themselves, when we spoke to them, as metallic hardcore instead of metalcore, which I think is a better descriptor, even though it's metalcore, I guess. But this tends towards more the hardcore. And the first fucking song, CSHF, I think it's called, or something like that. It's just four letters. Fucking takes off, and they never let their foot off the gas. It's fucking great. Obligatory Existence is a fucking killer song. For movies, I saw on Hulu, Appendage, written and directed by Anna Slovovic. It's about a young fashion designer who starts to grow something out of her side due to, like, anxiety and stress and stuff at work and everything. And I fucking loved it. I thought it was super fucking fun. I don't know if people are talking well about it at all. I don't know anybody that's seen it, but I fucking loved it. So
I saw it.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Oh yeah, I thought it was great. And I mean, honestly, as far as special effects go, the eyes that they had were amazing. I was like, it was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it. Yeah.
It was straight nasty. Like, it was a nasty ass movie in a good way. Like, it was great.
Yeah. It was dope. All right, I'm good.
All right.
That's it.
Jonas is frozen in time.
I got some. Music. Music. I will recommend Pop and Hear Me.
I can hear him.
All right. So it's just host Ryan.
Yeah.
It's just host Ryan. It's frozen. He'll come back.
He's back.
Are you back, Ryan?
Yeah. He looks like he's back.
Yeah. That was what happened. It was Ryan that was frozen in time, not me.
Weird.
But no, my first recommendation is Poppy's new song called Knock Off. It rules. I like Poppy a lot. I've liked Poppy for a long time, and everything that comes out for her new stuff seems to be really, really good. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, a hip hop artist that me and host Ryan Ryback also love, called Cal Scrubby. He is a fantastic hip hop artist, and he keeps on coming up with new stuff, and he keeps on dropping unreleased songs attached to his most recent album called Casino. So he's great. Physical media, I'm going to recommend the 4K Scream 3 steelbook that just came out, because it is a really good transfer. That was one of the movies that kind of had that weird look on Blu-ray. That one and Scream 4 both kind of had this weird look on Blu-ray where it was like shiny for no reason. And
so you can really see her bangs, like, yeah, she had shiny bangs,
dude. So you can see her bangs in 4K now, and you can actually see the hairdresser making the mistakes in the background. They're just like, it's very
in real time.
I just watched 3, and boy, I tell you, man, is that movie a piece of shit. I mean, like, own it. But boy, I mean, like, Ghostface is like blowing up houses and stuff like that. I'm like, come on, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta slow down. I like Ghostface, but man, like Jason building the tunnels. Like, I mean, like, for like a proper explosion, you need like a degree. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I don't know. Like, I'm like,
yeah, dude. There's so many things in Scream 3 that are absolute dog shit, and it's so fun because of it. Like, Jay and Silent Bob show up in the fucking movie. Like, it's just, why? Okay, like, why is Jay and Silent Bob in there? But also on top of that, like, yeah, there's so many things wrong with that movie, and it's one of those movies that when you watch it the first time, you're like, this is a really shitty Scream movie, and then when you watch it the second time, you're like, you know what? This is a really shitty Scream movie, and it's like, it's fun at that point. Like, it's like, all right, you know what? That's all right. But yeah, the transfer is fantastic, and it's weird because the reason I own it is because I have to own the entire franchise once I start buying it. If not, my brain will short out and I will have a stroke. So I have that now. It's also the only Steelbook that is red. All of the other ones are black. So it makes me want to pick my eyes out. But listen, it's the whole franchise, so it's that. As far as streaming goes, I also watch Totally Killer. And I'm going to recommend that one too, because that really, really fucking ruled.
So like, much. It ruled
way more than so much, like more than I thought. Like, it's one of those movies, like, because I kind of like, I like the time jump movies, like Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You are two of my favorites. When you start playing with time manipulation, I have a lot of fun with that. I was worried that this one was going to be kind of contrived because of those other movies that already exist, and fuck no, this is literally Back to the Future as a slasher, and that rules.
They don't make any, they don't make any like bones, but they're like, yeah, this is, there's no secret. It's just straight up Back to the Future. And that works to the benefit completely.
Yeah. Works perfectly. And the main actress, Kiernan Shipka, she is
so good,
dude. Like, for anybody that hasn't, like, for anybody that's seen like her as Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, she's great in that. But like, this is a star maker performance. Like, she's so good as the lead in this. Yeah, it's just, it's a really, really honestly, just a great movie. It's streaming on Prime, I believe. So yeah.
Yes, it's a Prime original. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely check it out. It's one of those ones that Blumhouse comes out with every now and then. We're like, oh shit. Like, yeah, you guys can, you guys really can put out a movie that's really good. Like, so yeah, it's great.
If you like freaky and Happy Death Day, absolutely.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Honestly, my favorite part is her 2023 sensibilities going back to the 80s and like being completely offended.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Nobody giving a fuck.
Yeah, yeah, she not has at to all. Say. And also, like, the mom talking about doing coke in front of her children. She's just like, they don't know. Like, you know, just like stuff like that. It's just the actual humor in it is great. And also, just to, I'm going to say this because it was in the trailer. All I will say about this is the scene inside of the Gravitron totally fucking pays off. Like, that is an awesome scene. And, like, there's a little bit of it in the trailer. But I was worried that that's, because I was really excited about that scene specifically. And I was kind of worried. I was like, I hope they don't mess that up. No, that scene rules. So, yeah, absolutely. Full vouch on that one. That's all I got. Ryan?
Ryback. My book recommendation, I'm really enjoying Fever House by Keith Rosen. Keith is a good dude. He is a Portlander. This is a great book. This is a really cool book. This book is making the rounds globally. I'm kind of stoked to see it. It's a very good book. I rarely buy hardcover books, but this was a good one, and I'm really enjoying it. It's my October book, although I'm probably gonna finish it quicker because, you know, I'm smart and shit. You know what I mean? And you know, can read books. Movie wise, I am going to recommend VHS 85. I saw a lot of kind of mixed reviews about VHS. Well, people like some of it, and then some people didn't like all of it, which is kind of the VHS sort of deal. But I kind of liked all of it. Like, I didn't like, I like the wraparound story, which is actually has a good punchline at the end. And I like the Jonas is very close to his camera right now, which is kind of giving
me. I know it's just that was, don't worry.
I don't know. Like, the VHS series is what it is. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's fine. But 85, I love
it. I want to say something real quick. I'm really excited to see VHS 85. I've been watching all the others again leading up to it, and I'm at Viral. I finished Viral. Mm. They're all fucking dope. I don't know, some of them are okay. I hated this one, but this one was good. This only one good one. This every single one has been either like super fun or fucking incredible. Well, VHS ones, I'm I've completely come around. And
you're gonna love
there's nothing.
And you're gonna and you're gonna really love 85. You know, and honestly, like there's a lot of like kind of like original tales in 85. Like it's kind of its own thing, and so I kind of dig it. And then the
also,
last...
real quick, Ryan, just to piggyback on that, one of the directors in VHS 85 is going to be somebody who's going to be on a future show. That is Gigi Salguero, who is a fantastic filmmaker, and she directed one of these segments in there.
Yeah, she with the Aztec one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's so good. That one's like so good. That one's so good.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, like I was super just the whole flow of that, and then just like the anyways. The other movie I'm gonna suggest is I just rewatched The Haunt, and and I've suggested on the show before, but I am not the biggest what's his name fan. But I really like
Ross.
Eli Roth. I mean, like, I like Eli Roth. Like, I like him. You know what I mean? I haven't loved everything he's done, but him as a producer on this, I don't know his involvement with it. But Haunt is really, really great. It's a real solid horror movie. It's like a straight up horror movie. It's brutal. It's like it's got classic horror. Like I don't know. It's just like a great horror movie. So oh, and Bingo Hell. I'm going to suggest Bingo Hell too, just because Bingo Hell is just super.
That's Gigi Salguero.
Bingo Hell is
super rad.
Super rad. My kind of horror movie. You know what I mean?
Like, it's got the always creepy Richard Brake in it.
Yeah, he's so good on it. We should get him on the show too. So,
one of my horror ideas I'm working on now is a geriatric horror. It's about a group of old people, and I think of
sweet. Ryan, what do you got?
So I'm not usually on here. So I don't know what you guys normally talk about as far as some of the stuff. So
recommend
old
anything.
Stuff that I like. As far as books go, I just finished the second read through of the Dresden series. So if you guys have ever read through Dresden, it's amazing. If I had my druthers and I was able to direct anything, I would love to do a HBO series on Dresden. I think it would be amazing. As far as I'm going to go the physical media route that you went, if you guys have seen the 4K rescan of The Thing,
I'd love to see that actually. Yeah,
it is amazing. like, and I know I said I really like Evil Dead and Army of Darkness earlier, but honestly, I feel like The Thing is the epitome of horror films because it was all practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
And with this 4K rescan, it looks like they filmed it last week. It's amazing. It is so worth watching.
I have to pick that one up.
Wilford Brimley oddly looks the same last week as he did it. Like that guy looked like the diabetes guy from like you look like that in like junior in middle school. You know what I mean? Like he was like he had like a white mustache. The special effects, why am I forgetting his name? Is so amazing. He did
Don Carpenter?
Special effects in it. And then he vanished as a human being. He like vanished someplace. Yeah. Because he also did the special effects in RoboCop, which was my favorite movie of all time. Not the remake, as I said earlier. Not RoboCop, but RoboCop. he did the special effects in that. He's amazing. So yeah, no, that's I should probably
Music wise, I already pinged him once. But if you guys want to check out Fox Royale, I highly, highly recommend it. They're touring Europe right now, and we'll be back in the States in a couple weeks. But they are super awesome. They're one of those bands that they're like on the cusp of really breaking out and being huge. Love so that. They're, I'd say. Awesome. I also did VFX for a horror film that is premiering on the 20th called Happy Halloween. It's directed by Greer. And it'll probably early next year start hitting film festival circuit. But it is a slasher that she wrote and it's a lot of fun. It's I think it'll be great. It's she took a lot of inspiration from Scream and she's really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
I think that's the big things. I also, as far as recent streaming stuff, I did just watch the first movie I watched for October was No One Will Save You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good.
I actually really
so loved it. Good.
So good.
Yeah, it's like hardly any dialogue, and yet they pulled it off really well. The ending was
I've been.
Other than that, it was great.
I think there's only one line.
I've been yelling at people all week about how that movie's fucking great because they're like, it's just a dumb fucking alien movie, and the aliens are the same. They took the like classic like boring tropes and perfect. It was like the final form that we've all been waiting for to see all these tropes hit, and and then they did it with no dialogue, and it's fucking perfect. I love that.
I think my only thing was if they'd have ended the movie where she was laying on the ground and kind of smiling, you know, at kind of the experience, had they just ended it there, I think it would have been a better film than ending on the weird dance number that they did at the end. I think it would have been better. But that's
I
kind of loved it.
We almost got into a fight in our group chat because I hated the movie at first, and then I rewatched it with headphones on. So I could really like absorb the sound because honestly, a movie with no dialogue, like, and this was my own dumb fault because I was watching it and I was like, and I already knew that the movie had no dialogue. So I just put it on my TV, and you know, flat screen TVs, they have shit sound. So I'm like watching it and I'm going like, okay, like it's visually cool, but this is boring, blah, 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 blah. And I told them, I was like, I fucking hated that. And they were just like, no, like they were like, basically they were like, we don't accept that. So I rewatched it with headphones on, and then I was like, oh no, this movie is actually brilliant because the stuff that they did with the sound was genius for a movie with no dialogue, and it made it 10 times more scary and tense, you know, like, so that's, I want to say this because this is also going to link back to your film. There are certain films that I think should be seen in a theater, and I think that yours is one of those that I think would go very well in the theater because of not only the sound, the music, just the way that that movie is would go great in a theater. So like when you start doing, you know, outside of just film festivals, when you start doing like film premieres and stuff, I think that's where your movie is really going to take off. Like, I think that's where people are really going to end up like really, really enjoying that. And that's where I think No One Will Save You. If that would have got a theater run, dude, nobody would have been able to deny that movie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the sound on that one blew me away.
Yeah.
Ryan, real quick, going back to Rob Bottin.
Yeah, Rob Bottin. That's it. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh,
he
yeah.
not only did The Thing and RoboCop, but he did Total Recall and Seven.
Yeah. And then
Seven now was the last horror movie he did.
And now they say he like lives in like he does like real estate someplace or something like that. Like he did
Mr. Deeds and then like an episode of Game of Thrones, and that's the last thing he's done.
Listen, if anything's gonna get you out of the movie game, it's gonna be fucking Mr. Deeds.
Like Sean Connery did that like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and like, and then it sucked so bad that it was the last movie he did.
He just dipped out.
Yeah, because he was just like, I'm done with this. Like, I'm like,
this shit.
If this how it's going to be from here on out, like, let's just not do it. I'm going to
go to retire on a boat. He's just like, I'm out.
So I knew Harbinger Down took some inspiration from The Thing, but they didn't use the practical effects guy from The Thing for that.
I don't know.
Graham, did they? Did you Rob Bottin? Did you see him doing? Did he do visual effects for Harbinger Down?
Basic Instinct. No. The Great Outwood, The Witches of Eastwick.
Oh wow!
Inner Space right before RoboCop.
I didn't know that.
I love Inner Space.
I didn't know that Rob Bottin made the vagina in Basic Instinct. That's very nice. Good for him.
It's a lot of work.
Everybody's literally everybody's vagina. Everybody's favorite vagina.
The most famous one probably in movie history.
Right. Yeah. I mean, really. I mean, there's been a lot of vaginas in movies. That one was.
That was the one where everybody did the Leonardo DiCaprio meme, where they like knocked their popcorn over and pointed. They were like, look what we saw. It wasn't a shadow. Like kids that snuck into the movie, they were like, I have questions now. Like,
that and Teeth.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
he did Teeth?
No, I'm saying those are the most famous vaginas.
I wish
he did Teeth.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I was going to say, people have a lot of questions after Teen.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids that snuck into that movie, they have way different questions.
Well, we have very few changes in our battle of the countries, our the risk board of AGHP fans leads off with the United States, with the UK coming in second, followed by Canada. New Zealand and Canada actually tied now. Germany, Australia. Man, we love you. We did Sam Curtin on here. We've had two guests from Tasmania. That's a lot of, I almost call it Transylvania, Tasmania. I'm an American. I learned in American schools. Like, we don't really know where any of these things are. We just say things.
Shit.
Like
Transylvania.
The only reason
it's
we know
where Dracula or kangaroos
or like Tasmania is the devil. You know what I mean? The spinny devil thing. The Tasmania devil was in the Guinness Book of World Records. So they had that picture of it, like, because it was like the rarest animal in the world.
Now I want to hear an Australian guy say Nosferatu. I want to hear that really bad now.
Yeah. Germany, though, coming in before Australia. Sweden holding in there strong. Turks and Caicos still in there. India, Mexico, Poland, Netherlands, France. I got to say, Poland, we love you. We go up and down. We're really high up in here. We're like, at times, we're like number 10 in film interview podcasts. So, Poland, we love you. Please reach out to us, Poland, and give us some Polish. There's
some Polish
horror stuff. Like, we'll totally interview them. You know what I mean? Like, Netherlands, France, Puerto Rico, Czech Republic, and Ireland coming in the tops. Thank you all for checking it out. We do have a Patreon thing going on this month. Jonas,
join our Patreon, you become a member of the Army of the Goddamn. As of now, we got Drew Muldowney, Stephanie Gurley, Katie Wiking, Chris Fortune, Alan Graham, Bacon Bits the Cat, Angela, Jasmine Pettit, Jason Daniels, Jake Jolly, Mom, Ron Knobloch, Kristen Pearl, Manny Velasquez, Coleman Rosenberg. My mom just joined
Hell yeah.
The Army of the Goddamn. I think it was just so I'd mention her every episode, but shout out, great. Mom. I love you. I also want to say to all the members of the Army of the Goddamn, I'm going to be asking you to send me a picture of yourself or representation of yourself. I'm going to be making trading cards for the entire group, the entire army.
What's an army called?
Is it just an army? Yeah. They'll be personalized and everything. It's going to be super rad. They'll be available digitally by Halloween. And if we get enough really good momentum and Patreon members, we'll make a physical deck.
Hell yeah.
So.
Also, this month, I'm going to be doing something specifically cool for all of y'all. If you sign up for our Patreon anytime between now and October 30th, and keep in mind, we have a $1 tier, so it's kind of like accessible to anybody. But if you sign up for any of the tiers at all in our Patreon and you join the Army of the Goddamned, I will put you into a drawing for a giveaway for some physical media, because I am going to downsize, because I have some duplicates. I have some stuff that I don't need. I have some stuff that I think would be cool to be in other people's hands. I actually have a lot of stuff that I'm going to be giving away, and I'm going to be doing it in like packs. So like, you're going to get like a horror pack, like a horror pack exclusive pack. You're going to get a slasher pack. You're going to get a Blumhouse pack. You're going to like, it's going to be cool shit. So I'm going to do those drawings on Halloween. I'm going to do it on Halloween.
Nice.
And it's going to be anybody that's a part of the Patreon as of Halloween, the morning of Halloween. If you're in there, you're in the drawing. And that's just it's just our way of saying thank you guys for doing that cool stuff, and you know, giving you guys some Blu-rays, some horror physical media, because that shit still needs to be supported. Physical media totally still needs to be supported, because a lot of artists, directors, actors, all those people, they make actual money off of those sales. So yeah, that's like, you know, so buy it.
So let Jonas give you something for free.
Yes, so that you can look at it and be like, oh shit, this is great. I'm going to go buy some more.
That's true. You're going to need to fill in those.
And this month, from me, you'll be getting fucking nothing.
he's very busy.
I got all sorts of shit going on.
Murder month.
I have like so many murders, but now I got like a ton of article deadlines and shows and shit like that. So,
and a full crawl space.
And, yes. I need to get like a big broom to push in there to like make space to like.
He's got to keep his dogs away from it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's fucking haunted. Anyways, thank you all. Go check out Eldritch USA when it comes around. Big shout out to Ryan Smith. Go follow him on all the deals. Thank you all for tuning in. If you are struggling in this world, please reach out to us. We all need to do this together. Stick around for the next round of horror movies. We're all kind of crazy, so we can all be crazy together. We love you very much. And until I see you next time, please go start some fires and break some glass. Thank you very much.